And hello again. This is Scots Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison. And welcome to the programme that does not only feature the Scots language, but celebrates Athing to D with the Scots language. In this edition, we're over in Ireland at the Celtic Media Festival, a festival that brings together Celtic radio, film, TV and interactive media for other Celtic nations and regions. More on that later. And we find out what's happening to your Scots language coordinators in schools. We're at a new production for the National Theatre of Scotland, Cad Granite, set outdoors in Aberdeen. And we're in Edinburgh to hear what's going on in Tradfest this year, the festival that celebrates traditional culture and its shapes and forms. There's a lot of celebrating in this episode, and it just merges fine into the spring. Mind, we are in spring. We begin in Southern Ireland, in a beautiful wee coastal toon down in the county of Waterford on the south coast of Ireland for the Celtic Media Festival. Now, Scots Radio was honoured to be nominated for an award in this festival. So I gathered we around 300 delegates from other Celtic countries and regions in the world for 3 days of seminars, awards in Athing, speaking about Celtic media and taking delight and hearing about native languages being spoken on screen, radio and stage and in person in all the after sessions, important after sessions. And a lot of delight at this sort of event is meeting and speaking to like-minded folk who are doing the same as us, looking after and enjoying their ain language. Among them was Aidan McFaulin, chair of the Irish Language Broadcasting Fund in Northern Ireland. Aidan told me about the first shoots of the Celtic Media Festival.
Well, it's a strange misnomer in some ways. Basically, it was an excuse, I think, for the smaller nations in the United Kingdom to get together. So Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, Scotland and Wales got together to set up a Celtic film festival, and then the Bretons joined them because they speak a Celtic language there. And then the Cornish came along as well, and then people from the Isle of Man, all the communities which had a Celtic background, and finally Galicia in the north of Spain.
But look here, for Australia and New Zealand, what are they doing here?
That I haven't worked out yet.
It's really confusing.
It may be something to do with the diaspora. You know, there's an enormous diaspora of the Celtic people in Canada, as USA, and the Antipodes. So that may be it. But I actually haven't met any of them yet, so I haven't had an opportunity to find out what brought them here.
We'll seek them out and find them. So, when did it begin? Can you remember when it started? Because you've been to a fair few of them now.
I came across it in the 1980s. I was asked to translate they had it in Newcastle in County Down in Northern Ireland, the Celtic Film Festival. It was quite small at the time, and I was asked to translate the programme. So that was my first involvement. But then at a later stage, I became involved more intensely, because in 1990, I was employed with an organisation called Altach Trust, which is a cross-community Irish language organisation. And our chairman had researched the whole issue of Irish language television in Northern Ireland and had produced a report. So I thought he was mad. This was March 1990, and there was no Irish language television programme at all in the Republic. There were some programmes on the main channel. There was no dedicated channel for Gaelic in Scotland. There was for Welsh and Wales, but there's a very big Welsh-speaking community there. So I thought, and the Gaelic Broadcasting Fund had just been set up.
It's kind of really difficult to remember that time, because we just took it for granted now.
It's normalised. It's right through the society now, but at that time you had a struggle for everything. In the early days, I remember speaking to the people who set up the. Who got the funding for the Gaelic Broadcasting Committee, as it was known then at the time, and they had lobbied for years and years and years very effectively.
It's now had BBC Alba.
It's moved into BBC Alba, and now there's a dedicated station. Before that, they were funding programmes that were broadcast on the main broadcast, you know, the main broadcast platforms. I think BBC Scotland and I think there were two ITV stations, Grampian, I think, and there was some other one.
Yep.
And they broadcast on those. But again, they were funding programmes, and from what I heard, they could then be repeated. So what I was told by some of the people involved were there was that they would broadcast a programme in the middle of the night and then repeat it again in the middle of the night, so nobody ever got to see it.
Nobody saw it. Great. What's the value of this sort of festival? What do you think is the value here?
What I found extremely useful here was getting to know people who had done the things that we were trying to do. We were trying to get a fund for Northern Ireland. And also in the early stages, there was a campaign on to get the dedicated Irish language television station in the south. That's now known as TG Cahir. It didn't actually appear until 1996. Mm. So there was a long campaign there. So there were a whole lot of things were intertwined, and we got enormous advice from our Welsh friends, people that I met here, and support as well, because they would sort of give us hints into how to approach these issues.
That's exactly what I'm finding. Of course, speaking to yourself, for instance, just about what you've been through is immensely helpful. It's a bit daunting when you said it's taken you 13 years to get to where you are now.
It took us 13 years, but Northern Ireland is a particularly awkward place in terms of the language politics. I think it's even worse than Scotland in terms of because the language, both languages, Irish and Ulster Scots, are quite divisive in Northern Ireland, in that. Sort of one tends to be seen to belong, and I'm using the word belong in inverted commas, to one section of the community, and the other belongs in the same way to the other. As it happens, I claim them both.
That's the safest side to be on. We've had a lot of fun the last few days, and there's more fun to come. But in a couple of hours, we're going to be doing another awards ceremony.
Yes.
And Scots Radio has been nominated in the magazine category for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, in either case, I'll pick the pieces up.
Pick the pieces up.
And I'll feed you tea or coffee or drink or hard drink or whatever you want.
Well, we've now got that in tapes, so I'll hold you to your promise. Aidan, it's a pleasure meeting you.
Oh, thanks very much.
And Aidan did stick to his promise. Aidan McFarlane, chair of the Irish Language Broadcasting Fund in Northern Ireland. And a big ta to Aidan for all his hospitality. And let me just thank the organisers again and the executive committee for making the Celtic Media Festival happen. And a special shout out to Festival Director Katrina Logan, Festival Coordinator Naomi Wright, and need to forget my good friend and Technical Director John Smith. And did we win? Well, we did in so many different ways, but we didn't win a Celtic Talk. That's for next time. And another thank you and shout out to our friends in Radio Nangale for the fun and hospitality there. And congratulations on their wins in their different categories. Here's to Mayor Celtic Bridges. And in keeping with the spirit of Ireland and the Irish welcome, here's Irish band Lunasa with the Beltane Set. Irish band Lunasa with a Beltane set. We've just passed Beltane. And by the way, the first tune, Cad Hog Ties, was written by Phil Cunningham. See, there are a lot of Celtic bridges in that one. To Metters Here, new in 2014, Education Scotland appointed four Scots language coordinators. Three FAE schools, Iowa Scotland, to develop the use of the Scots language in the classroom. So for three of them, this was a 23-month secondment. And for them all, there was a remit to support the teaching of Scots. Each coordinator had their own designated area, and between them covered the whole of Scotland. The project was a huge success, so that the eye of the secondment fits the situation new. I joined coordinators Diane Anderson and Bruce Ewenson at Diane's last gathering with teachers in Aberdeenshire and asked Diane about Fitz happening.
The situation now is that the government is off a place we've been doing. They think we're doing a good job and they've found funding for us to continue.
But
three out of the four of us are seconded teachers and our local authorities want us back. Off a fine to be wanted, but basically if you can't get teachers, you can't release folk to do more than their 23 months, and we were actually really lucky because we were supported to do our full 23 months.
So you're going back, Fan?
I'm going back on the 1st of April, no joke.
How do you feel about that?
I'm sad in some ways because I've loved this and I feel as if we've made a difference. I feel as if we've been doing off a good work and I would have liked to have continued. However, I'm going back to my dream job. I loved what I was doing before I was doing this, and you can't argue with going back and working with Burns and Dundee. It's going to be bra and I'm really excited about
it. You're head of English, buddy.
I'm principal teacher English at the Morgan and Dundee, Morgan Academy. I loved that. And before I even kent about Scots language coordinators, I would have said I was the happiest person in the world in my work. I really enjoyed it. It was my dream job. This came up and it was an opportunity I couldn't say no to. But it was one of that jobs in the future that you didn't can exist, really.
Bruce, I'm going to come across to you now. I'm hesitant to say the phrase, but you're the last man standing. You're going to be left. How do you feel about that?
Not just that, no worried. I feel like I was the first man standing. I'm into my sixth year of writing and promoting either dialect or Scots language teaching material. The first 3 years I did just in Shetland and did that on my own with the help of volunteers. Then I had 2 years working with three other colleagues working across the country. Learned a lot from them. I couldn't ask for three better folk to work with. Now it's the whole country but back to me, but I'm hopeful that that won't be for long, and I will certainly be calling in on as many friends in the Scots language world to help me as possible.
So is there going to be more coordinators appointed then, Bruce?
It's hard to say. As Diane says, there's a need for teachers in the classroom. That comes before seconded folk in development officer posts, so it's really going to be each case specific. Like, depends what authority you're coming for.
But you see, folk listening to this will be thinking, well, but Fitz a problem. The Scottish Government has said that they're going to promote the Scots, and Education Scotland's obviously right ahead in it. And of course, we've got Creative Scotland saying they're promoting Scots. So Fitz a problem. Why is there no mere Scots language coordinators new?
As far as I'm aware, and Diane might come better as me, the problem is having a teacher in a class to teach Burns, and that is priority, and that is why we have a shortage. Is that right, Diane?
So it's a shortage of teachers in the classroom.
Well, if you're doing a secondment, they need somebody to replace you. And if they can't get somebody to replace you, and it's well documented, there's areas the country can't get teachers, full stop. Until they've got teachers to release, then it can't happen. But don't be doing hearted. I mean, the process is to start. They'll need to advertise for new folk. And if they get the right folk, then they'll negotiate with local authorities. And hopefully, Bruce will get a couple of folk to support him that will do almost as good a job as Simon and Katrina and I did.
OK, that brings us on to what we were doing the next, and what you and were hosting the next. Tell me if it was happening here, Diane.
This was the third session we teachers from Aberdeenshire looking at Scots language and how to introduce it in a classroom, fit why you would do it, and actually fit why you would do it, the methods you would use as well as the reasons for it. We've done this training in different authorities, and about half the authorities across the country in different shapes or forms. I have to say Aberdeenshire has been a grand group, but then other groups I've done have been super, super teachers, keen to learn, keen to try things out, looking for support, looking for resources, looking for the reasons for doing it, and just help for a community, other folk that are interested in Scots.
So for your point of view then, Bruce, I mean, I'm not saying that you've had it easy, but it's a different thing altogether for Shetland, because Shetland, the culture in Shetland, the language in Shetland, is taken for granted that that is important, but we've had this conversation before. It's not quite the same in other parts of Scotland, is it?
Certainly isn't it, and that has been one of the things that I had to learn, and the challenges I had to take on when I moved from being a dialect coordinator in Shetland to being a Scots language coordinator for the whole country. Had to work with authorities like West Lothian, Edinburgh, the Borders, and then tonight I was here in Aberdeenshire with this Alphafine group of Doric speakers, and for a period that'll be the case. It'll be Bruce Johnson, the Shetland speaking Scots language coordinator, having to find ways that he can transfer knowledge and best practice to areas of Scotland where he is not a natural speaker. But the approach that I bring to that, and the advantage that I think comes we doing that sort of thing, is I'm seeing how this sort of work can be done across the country. I'm not going to come in and attempt to tell them how they should speak in class, or what is right or wrong, or what is good or bad Scots. What I'm going to come and be able to tell folk is what lessons work, what is the best way to make the pupils confident, what is the best way to raise attainment, how Scots complements English in the literacy lessons, and generally raise the status of Scots and help as many teachers as possible across the country.
Okay. I'm not saying you're not coming back, and I hope, I think a lot of folk will be thinking, oh, well, we'll hope that Diane does come back as our coordinator, because you've done a lot of work for Abbey in the Scots language fraternity, Diane. But what do you think you've achieved? She sighs.
Hard,
deep sigh.
Hard question. Well, there's a growing community now of folk that are confident that teaching Scots is a good right thing, that they're confident to give things a go, to actually try it in the classroom, to ken that they've got government backing, they've got support for Education Scotland. And that it can help their learners. It can help with sticking the gap with that big agenda the government has, I knew. It can help raise attainment, help with literacy. And that, I think, is the biggest thing, that we have taken down some of the barriers, opened folks in, and we now have more folk that are actually willing to do it, or folk that have been using Scots in class for years but are willing to tell other folk that they're doing it and share their good practice now.
That's raised the pride, I think, somewhere.
I think so.
Can I add to that, Frieda? Well, I would say, for working with Diane for the last 2 years, nobody has ever broken down so many barriers in professional working life as what Diane has done in her 2 years working as a Scots language coordinator, whether it is sitting in a meeting with friends, presenting in front of a group of entire strangers, sending emails that are personal, sending emails that are professional. Nobody has used Doric as much or with as much confidence as Diane Anderson has.
Bruce Ewenson, Faith Shetland, finishing that session with Diane Anderson. And we'll pit Bruce. And we pit Urain congratulations to Diane for all the work she's done. And I'll put another bit here. Here's to the work that she'll do yet. We haven't seen the last of Diane Anderson. Well, that I am sure. She's just got started. A power pack and twa legs and sometimes sheen. This is Faith. Claire Hastings' new album, Atween River and Railway. This is The Boffy Lads.
For that Boffy Lads, the Boffy Lads, can they get what they're seeking? They'll pack a guest and they'll gang and enlist and leave the lassies greeted. When I was a noob at sweet 16, we beauty just in blooming. Little did I care. 1999 be greeting. For that Offaly lads, the Boffy lads, can they get what they're seeking? They'll pack a kist and they'll gang and enlist and leave the lassies greeting. For the blue boy lads are Guybro lads, but they're false and deceiving. For they'll tack on, they'll gang a wo and leave the lassies greeting. For that Offaly lads, the Boffy lads, can they get what they're seeking? They'll pack a kist and they'll gang and enlist and leave the lassies greeting. And tain my mother's bidding, I wanna be sitting by your fireside crying hush above my bairnie. Hush above, for I'm your ma, the Lord kens was your daddy. I'll tack it, Cain, and I'll be away. Oh, the young lads in the groaning. Sweet 16, wee beauty just in blooming. Little, little did I ken at 19 I'd be greeting. For that Offaly lads, the Boffy lads, can they get what they're seeking? They'll pack a kist and they'll gang and enlist and leave the lassies greeting.
Lovely Clare Hastings and the Boffy Lads, the Clare's new CD Between River and Railway. And that North East song leads me into Granite, a unique new production for the National Theatre of Scotland, set in the quadrangle at the majestic Marshall College in the Heart of Aberdeen, outside in the quadrangle, at Necht. It was now warm, but the production was superb, one of the best of its kind I've seen for a long time. New, contemporary, drawn for history, past and present, set on a stage that transformed into athing for the kahl granite quarries of the northeast to the Russian streets and, of course, the Isle Rigs, under an installation in granite and pewter, the wonders of the cosmos. This was a huge community production that incorporated groups for our city to help to tell the city's story. Over 5 months in the city, I quote, they created a series of trailblazers that brought sound, video, theatre, dance and written word installations across Aberdeen. For the Russian School, the Nigerian Choir, the Gordon Highlanders and the museums, they learned about the folk that left and helped shape the world with steen, chisels and ideas. Well, the production revolves around the story of James and Maggie Bizet, who left Aberdeen in 1863 and travelled back across Europe in 1869. James was a steen mason. The production opens with local quine and performer Joyce Faulkner striding up and down the stage, as only Joyce can do, quoting Nina Sheena Blackhall's written pieces about Aberdeen. She's followed by a burrach of performers like Monkeys Cavort and a Hinner, And that's a one-off sight that sets the scene just right. Well, before the audience arrived with their blankets, I got a chance to speak to Joyce. And here, fit the production was a boot.
Well, Granite was conceived by two ladies in Aberdeen, I think a few years ago. They just felt that there hadn't been done for a long time, a piece just reflecting the history mainly and the industrial history of Aberdeen. And they then approached the NTS, who I think approached the council. I'm not sure how it all worked, obviously. Everything nowadays has to be done in partnership. So it's not purely about Granite. It's really a slice of Aberdeen history and...
Stories?
There's a lot of poetry in it. There's one main story that runs through the piece. I mean, it's only an hour and a quarter long, but it follows the true story. It's based on the true story of Jimmy and Moggy Bissett for left Aberdeen in the 1860s. He was a master stonemason, and at that time, the czars were crying out for quality stonemasons to ging to Russia, and a lot of men for Aberdeen seemingly went over at that time. He went over... And it was to basically build St. Petersburg and Moscow, really, the streets and the casses, which are the steen cobbles, casses. A lot of the younger folk didn't ken that word at all, which is a right good Aberdeen word, the casses.
So is this a story about them coming back from, I suppose, the revolution? No,
it was well afore the revolution. It was basic, but they were told to leave. Because Bissett was a big socialist, a big union man, and a big Burns man, and they were basically told to leave Odessa for being subversive, and they had to mark their own way back to Aberdeen.
So did they have to walk back to Aberdeen? They walked
a lot of it. I think they got boats and all, but a lot of it, I mean, they were basically half dead by the time they got home, because they had to mark their own way back and were penniless. And he was gied his job back in a quarry when he came home again.
So this is the centrepiece of the whole production.
It is a story that runs sort of through it. Throughout that, they touch on the quarry and the fishing and the isle as well.
Now, obviously, you're going to be speaking in Scots and Doric.
Aye, predominantly, aye.
How much Doric is there in it?
I'd say the majority of it is in Doric, aye.
Is that just good for your lungs to hear that going on?
Oh, aye. Well, if I spoke in my mother tongue... most of my career anyway. Well, no, that's not true. Finnecan, I speak in my own tongue. So it's fine to be doing it in my own home tune. Because obviously, I would say I speak a hybrid Scots. I adapt my Scots to wherever I am in Scotland.
I'll come back to the playing a minty, but is there some sort of relief or release button things off in your head when you can go back into your own mother tongue?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I find it very difficult to write. And if I'm being creative, I definitely prefer writing in the Buchan tongue and speaking in the Buchan tongue to express myself. What I found quite worrying is doing this project is there is a younger group in under 20s and I don't think any of them speak in the mother tongue at all. Whether that's I assume technology has a lot to blame for that. And at the end of the day, the Scots is an oral tradition, and there's obviously some in Bracken doing that. I mean, I read a couple of the pieces to them, and it just went over their heads. They just weren't getting it at all, which I found half a worrying.
But it's productions like this that's maybe going to not bring it back in big lumps and thumps, but it'll maybe just highlight the fact that this is needed.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Certainly, I mean, I'm right glad Sheena Blackhall, who to me is one of Scotland's unsung heroes. I mean, the body of Sheena's work is phenomenal, which is some marker. And I'm glad there's quite a lot of Sheena's work being used in this, as well as a lot of other very talented writers for the North East and all.
Okay. Now, again, you're waiting for the press conference to start, and I've kidnapped you up this nuke in the quad. But give a bitty out of the plane, you can quote. Just I kind of put you in the spot, and I'm sorry for that. But can you give a wee bitty out?
Oh, your call wind blows right through my veins, and your granite buildings stand fast. Great forefathers, raising an eyebrow at the shop, cafe, pub littered streets. We used to be unique. Now we are the same. Can you believe you strove for this? The dust in your lungs, your char nails, the bairns you never kent. Every crystal that winks for the block, hauled into place, carved, polished, until it shone.
Kev, that minds me on. And maybe I'm getting off the glide altogether, but it minds me on Under Milkwood, Dylan Thomas a bit.
I would say actually a lot of this piece, it is very atmospheric as opposed to, obviously you can't tell the story at Aberdeen in an hour and a quarter. You would be. So I would say if it is, it's really a piece, it's almost like a atmospheric art installation with words laid on top of it, really. And I think it definitely captures the essence of the Northeast character, which, of course, goes hand in hand with the weather and with architecture, you know, for what are geographically and weather-wise.
And granite. Right, I'll leave you in peace and quiet.
Never that.
Just catch up with you later on.
Thank you, Frida.
They feed no pigeons or seagulls. They keep on the civic statues. Dive bomb travellers. They are a call city. Don't complain. They are thermal underwear and bited hail.
Simon Sharkey, I'm director of Granite.
Right. I've asked Joyce for Granite's our boot, Simon, but give me your interpretation of this Aberdeen.
Granite is it's about Aberdeen. It's a story of Aberdeen by the people of Aberdeen for the rest of the world. There's loads and loads of different stories and loads of different characters, and you're given a snapshot into their lives, and as a big collective piece of a show that you watch, it comes together to tell a story of a place.
So fit with the challenges. DNS.
The size, the epicness, loads of challenges. Knowing what to leave out, because there's so many stories for Aberdeen and so many people that we met that told us stories.
So you about just collected other the stories?
We collected the stories by coming up, and we've been here since September of last year, but we've been in conversation with people for over 2 years.
So far did you get? Where did you go to find the stories?
We went to shopping centres, we went to drama clubs, we went to churches, we went to pubs and folk nights, and anywhere that people were willing to sit down and have an atter, we would do that. And sometimes we would do a workshop with them, and we would hear about all sorts. And we met business people, and the story, the central story we got from the last remaining Granite business in Aberdeen, he told us a story about the Russian.
There was a legend about the Kemeny Russian. Is that the same story? Where they had to come back?
They went to Odessa to cut stone, and they got kicked out because they were being seditious with their quotations of Burns and Hosting Kayleys. it was seen as too Bolshevik for the Tsarists, Russia, and they kicked them out.
No. According to legend, again, the Northeast folk are nae gushing. They're nae given to wanting to speak a lot. But did you hear any trouble getting them to tell you the stories?
No trouble at all. I know they're no gushing, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's not reticence either. I think it's confidence, because the folk up here, I think, have got a really, really strong connection and sense of belonging. And if you ask, you get a story, you know, and you'll get it properly for the folk up here, you know. Once you've shared a dram or you've shared a minute or two with a bunch of folk.
Simon, why picking up the fact that you've teen to the place, as they say?
I love Aberdeen. I think it's spectacular. The architecture's just incredible. And as I say, I feel as if I belong here. We've been here a long time, you know, since National Theatre's been here a long time. And every time I come back, I feel another wee sense of belonging.
He's due back, Simon.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Simon Sharkey, director of Granite for the National Theatre of Scotland, that was produced in association with Aberdeen City Council. Time for another bit of music with Twa Orkney Polkas for the Wrigley sisters, Jennifer and Hazel, for their album Idiom. This is Mirland's Polka and Peter Pratt's Polka. Orkney duo Jennifer and Hazel Wrigley, Twa Orkney Polkas for their album Idiom. And that just about takes us to the end of this episode, but we canna ging awa without telling you about another celebration, Tradfest, that's taking place aroon about Edinburgh, and it's on till the 8th of May. It's jam-packed with performers who are shapes and sizes and modes, from music to storytelling, dancing and mere and that. But I'll leave the festival and programmes director, Daniel Abercrombie, at the Scottish Storytelling Centre to tell you mere about Tradfest.
Tradfest is a celebration of folk arts in Edinburgh, spanning storytelling, music, craft, dance, visual arts, walking tours, talks, lectures, a whole range of different things, all related to this idea of tradition.
See, Abdi thinks it's just about folk music, but it's not, is it?
No. It's not a folk music festival, no. It's a real mix of everything.
Right, so Fire the Desk Comfy, because it's sprung out of somewhere.
Well, there was the Cayley Culture Festival that ran for 10 years, run by Edinburgh Council, and there was an idea to kind of rebrand and refresh that, which kind of fell in line with a kind of resurgence in the traditional arts within the Storytelling Centre and the formation of TRACS, Traditional Arts and Culture Scotland. So we were lucky enough to take that on, rebranded it as Tradfest, and gave it a new kind of lease of life.
I've been involved in it for the last couple of years, and I've seen it grow and bigger and bigger. How many performers this year?
We're looking at about
concerts.
I think there's over 100 events, singular events. Yeah. But you know, we as part of the festival, it's a kind of community-led thing. You know, we don't have a single curator or anything. And actually, we also put a public call out for people to participate. Now, there was a huge swell of events this year and ideas that people submitted to us. We try. I think we pretty much managed to get everyone in to perform in some way or other. But that is an indicator of there's a real interest around it now.
And is this throughout Scotland, Daniel, or is it just concentrated around Edinburgh?
I mean, the festival's based in Edinburgh, and it certainly does have a specific focus on Edinburgh as a location and as a thriving traditional arts scene. However, we have had submissions from across Scotland and further afield as well, and some of them are in the festival as well.
What about the international market? Is that growing as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, part of the idea with Tradfest is to promote Edinburgh as a traditional arts location, and we've got already visitors coming again from Newfoundland, which is fantastic, people that came last year. We've got a group from Holland coming over. This is already very early stages that I'm aware of this happening, so it's great.
Think about international performers, any on the list?
We've got a couple coming from Ireland. As part of the Soundhouse gigs at the Pleasance, they've got a couple of international performers. Sheesham Lotus and Son are performing, they're from America. They've got Gaul performing at the Storytelling Centre, and they're based in Scotland, but a mix of Iranian and Scottish music.
It's grand, it's in every direction. Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Pleasance there, of course. There's the club, there's the Tradfest club. Venues, give us an idea of what venues you're using out in Edinburgh.
So we, at the start of the whole Tradfest process, we look to venues and organisations that are already programming traditional arts activity throughout the year, bring them on board, see what ideas they've got. So Soundhouse and Douglas Robertson and Jane Ann there are programming into the Pleasance, so they've got a nice music programme there. That's kind of main music venue. Also programming into the Pleasance is the Edinburgh Folk Club, who are based there every Wednesday anyway. We've one gig at Summer Hall, there's a gig at the Queen's Hall, Dance Space are doing some dance related events, there's Cayley's going on in church halls across town. There's a whole range of different venues.
It just sounds like something that's going to grow and is going to grow again.
Yes, hopefully.
Right, now, how do folk get tickets? Nuts and bolts.
Storytelling Centre. We're the one-stop shop for everything you need to know. Programming, for ticketing, say 0131 556 9579 is our phone number. If you go to the Storytelling Centre website, or the Track Scotland website, all your information for Tradfest is there, and you can buy tickets for most events, or if we're not doing the tickets for a specific event, we'll have directions and phone numbers for the correct box office.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Daniel Abercrombie offering a feast of flavours and festivities. Thoroughly recommended. Just join in and enjoy. And that's it for another episode of Scots Radio. We still haven't managed to capture our resident rumbler, Steve Byrne. He has been seen, so we ken he's there, as I will say. But Richie, our soon sorter, is as ever in the wheelhouse, navigating us through the seas of soons and sorts of the programme. Are you there, Richie?
I certainly am. Doing my very best here, Fida.
It's been another busy month, actually. Ireland,
Ireland.
What? Again?
And
what's
think,
going on there? Sounds like, well, you had a better time in Ireland as well, eh?
Richie, I had a great time. I really had one of the best. And, you ken, it was such a fantastic opportunity to get to ken folk, speaking to folk. And as I said, the Gaeltacht, and the folk fae radio in Angale adopted me, because I think they just felt sorry for me, because I was the only Scots radio, Scots speaker there. And they said, you can't just wander about on your own, you better come with us.
Oh, bless them.
So I was adopted.
There you go.
I was adopted. John Morrison, thank you for that. The fae, the radio in Angale, for the time we had. So, that's the D, is to say thank you for listening. And Richie, are you standing by?
Oh, I'm always standing
by. You want to say thank you for listening or not? I never give you a chance to say thank you for listening.
I can't get a word in with you.
Oh, okay. That's for the idea. Just speak. And if you're still kerning amongst snow and dubs, just think about it. You've still to get the Chuchat storm and the Gabba Mai storm to come yet. And Faki and Fit, Richie.
That's what they call summertime, right?
That's summertime, then we'll be into summer. We've got 5 weeks of summer, and then it'll be winter again.
Five days, more like. Aye.
Listen, just ging out and enjoy Tradfest. We'll see you out and about, eh, Richie?
That's it.
We're finishing with a track for Dallahan. This is a new CD, Richie. A Matter of Time.
Oh, it's bra.
And this is called Dutch Courage. It's an apt notion.
Says certainly for this time of year.
Aye.
I think so.
For me, Frieda Morrison, and our soon sorter, Richie Werner.
Bye the new.